Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
But what about the police response in Orlando? There were several hours there between the start of the attack and when they went in and stormed the club. Earlier today, the city's police chief, John Mina, explained why law enforcement decided to storm the building when they did.
There was talk about bomb vests, about explosives throughout, and then there were statements made about imminent loss of life. And so that's why I made the decision to make the entry at that time.
Dina Temple-Raston is NPR's counterterrorism correspondent. She's with us now from New York. Dina, officials are starting to provide a timeline of events surrounding the attack. What can you tell us?
Well, what we understand is Omar Mateen, the shooter, is thought to have entered the club just before last call was made at 2 a.m. And then he just started opening fire with an AR-15 assault rifle. He had multiple clips which allowed him to kill and wound a huge number of people really quickly. There were about 300 people in the club, and police estimate that a third of those in the club were either killed or wounded by Mateen.
And why did the police not storm the building until much later, until around 5 a.m.?
They responded right away. They were outside the club, but they almost immediately had a hostage situation. 36 people were hiding out in this bathroom, and they were sending text messages that said they were being held and that the government and the gunman was with them. We don't have reports yet about anything that he might have said while he was holding those people who were in the bathroom, but that might give us some more clues about motive. We heard earlier from that tape that the police made the determination around 5 a.m. that the gunman intended to hurt hostages, that there could be more loss of life. And that was the concern. There was also a concern that he was strapped with explosives and therefore could kill all the hostages at once. And that's why they waited to move in and then finally moved in when they did.
Do we know if he killed anyone in the period between the moment that he took those hostages and 5 a.m.? Was there or was he just holding these people as far as we know?
We don't know that conclusively, but there are some little clues. We know that there were a number of texts from people who were hiding in the bathroom. And if you look at the schematics of the building, the bathrooms are actually very small. And there were some texts that came before the gunman was in the bathroom, and then more texts once he was inside holding them. One came from a young man who said that the gunman was in the bathroom and he was going to die. That young man has been identified as one of the dead. So there are some things we can piece together that way. Certainly, it was clear from Chief Mina that once they thought that there would be more loss of life, they went in. But you have to understand that when they storm a building, the rule of thumb is always that there's an overwhelming use of force, and it takes some time to make a plan to do something like that.
Well, give us the details about how they did storm the building once they did decide to do that.
Well, according to Orlando Police Chief John Mina, there were explosives that were placed on the outside concrete wall to blast through close to where the hostages were being held. And there were several flashbang explosives that were set off to distract the gunman. The explosives didn't quite break through the wall, so a Bearcat vehicle, think of that as sort of a wheeled armored personnel carrier. Anyway, it busted its way through the wall the rest of the way, and then the gunman came out. Chief Mina said that the gunman emerged almost immediately and started firing at police and sheriff's officers who had surrounded the area, and Mateen was killed in that exchange.
Now, police have said that Mateen pledged his allegiance to the head of ISIS in a 911 call just after the attack started. We've also been hearing today from the FBI director, James Comey, more about this attack. What are we hearing?
Well, FBI Director James Comey said there were strong indications that Mateen was radicalized. He said that investigators were going through his life, especially his electronics, his sort of electronic exhaust path, to understand how he came to be radicalized and whether anyone else was involved. But there's some confusing aspects that they're starting to uncover. For example, there were three different 911 calls from the killer to the police. The first time, around 2:30, so that's about a half hour after this started, he called and apparently hung up. The second time he called and spoke with the dispatcher, and then he hung up again, and then the dispatcher called him back and spoke to him briefly. And during that brief conversation, the shooter said that he was doing this for the leader of ISIS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. But in the same breath, he claimed solidarity with the Boston Marathon bombers. And then he mentioned this Florida man who was the first American to become a suicide bomber for al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda's arm in Syria. Comey also said that Mateen had mentioned Hezbollah and al-Qaeda al-Qaeda in the past. And this is all important because all these are actually competing terrorist groups. So it's resurrected some questions about his mental state.
That's Dina Temple-Raston, NPR's counterterrorism correspondent. Dina, just a few seconds left, but what do you want to know that you don't at this point?
I want to know exactly what motivated him to do this now, and I want to know more about how much anti-gay bias is actually in his life, how long that's been going on.
Well, Dina, great reporting. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.